The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
And God has broken the pride of our power, and the United States has won the last war it's ever going to win. Listen to me, brethren. The United States has won its last war. We will not win anymore. God did win the First World War for us, and then the Second World War. But he did not win the Korean War for us, nor the one in Vietnam. And he is not going to win in Central America. And he did not win when we tried to send a task force over to rescue our people in Iran. That's about 3-4 years ago now. They met a terrible defeat.
He was right. He was right. That was Herbert W. Armstrong from 1984. What would he be saying today? Yesterday, the United States completed its evacuation, its retreat, its defeat in Afghanistan. They got out a day early. They promised the Taliban. I mean, if they promised to the Taliban, they're going to keep those promises. So much so, they got out a day early. And you'll hear a montage here in just a moment. All of these commentators saying what Herbert Armstrong said back in 1984. He was right. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. We like to say thanks to our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3, and that platform that takes the audio version of this program out via live stream every day. That's at 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone, noontime on the East Coast, and 9 a.m. out West. To get to the video presentation of this show, however, you've got to go to our website. It's exclusively offered there at thetrumpet.com. You can go to the homepage every day that the live stream begins, or go to thetrumpet.com/live if you want to get to the live stream page and also the podcasts that are posted there within a couple of hours after each day's show. Monday through Friday, and from time to time, we try to put together a weekend edition as well for a radio station we have out in Arizona and also for our websites too. So much to get to on today's program. We're living in such momentous times, earth-shaking events happening, it seems, almost every day. Every day. It makes your head spin, particularly when you're putting together a program like this and you're trying to gather in the news and watch the news, as Jesus said, watch world events, particularly in how they relate to Bible prophecy. Prophecy is being fulfilled. That's what we want to step back and acknowledge and point out here at the start before we get into some of the details. But prophecy is being fulfilled. Here's what we wrote in He Was Right. We were talking about basically Herbert Armstrong's forecast, what he said even back as far as the 1950s and 60s in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. I've got them all right here that we'll plug today. The U.S. and Britain in prophecy will come to America under attack a little bit later, because that plays into what we're seeing in this Afghanistan nightmare. But then here, He Was Right. Well, we last updated this in 2017. I think the first edition of that booklet came out 10 or 12 years ago. And we just take you right through all of these prophecies of Herbert Armstrong, like the one that you just heard from him back in 1984. We say this in the booklet. So was Mr. Armstrong right to declare after World War II that America has won its last war. It says, looking from Korea to Cuba to Vietnam to Iran to Lebanon to Somalia to Kosovo to Iraq to Afghanistan to Ukraine, the answer is clear. All these episodes constitute clear American political and military defeats. Clearly, that's what's happening here. And still to hear all of these commentators that don't pay attention to Bible prophecy. They could care less about what your Bible prophesies. But even knowing what we know, it's still sobering. And at the same time, exciting to hear them say it. To hear them say what Herbert Armstrong said so many decades ago. Listen to this montage, clip 9.
I'm here to announce the completion of our withdrawal from Afghanistan.
The United States has been humbled today. The British Empire fought in Afghanistan and pulled out in defeat, as did the Soviet Union, and now the United States as well.
The hard reality is we lost. The U.S. military was given a mission to accomplish. It was given a series of missions, actually. And under this military leadership of the last 20 years, it failed to carry them out. The Taliban won the war, and we're retreating in disgrace.
Second, this is what withdrawal from a war that we did not win looks like. I mean, this is what it looks like. It's messy. It's awful.
Very clearly that we're watching some kind of pivot point in our history. The most obvious casualty, apart from the 13 dead servicemen last week, is American power and prestige, both of which, in the span of just days, have been profoundly and permanently diminished.
The U.S. is, as we've seen, handing over control to the same forces they've been fighting for 20 years.
If this is how it ends, how do you tell veterans that it was worth it?
Why did we spend the past decade there? What was the purpose? What was the goal?
This is a horrible defeat for America, and it's going to haunt us for years to come.
The concept of no man left behind is centuries old, and it is a concrete commitment that inspires loyalty. Do we still believe in that commitment?
You just know that people are still going to bleed and suffer. It's not even close to being over. You know, the worst is probably yet to come.
A war once called Operation Enduring Freedom, proving to be neither enduring nor leaving a legacy of freedom.
Enduring freedom. That's what the operation was called. And now a humiliating defeat. Retreating in disgrace. Tucker there said that we're at a pivot point. He's right about that. What a pivot point we're at. This is significant. And it's important that we get our minds, that we keep our minds on prophecy, on what God has prophesied. I mean, what greater proof do we have as to who the end time nations of Israel are today? Mr. Armstrong was spot on with this forecast regarding the British Empire. Going back again to the early, early versions of the United States and Britain in prophecy. Going back even to the 1930s and 40s. And he said, look, the sun has set on the British Empire. Now we're following in their steps. The United States, the great superpower. And so because of that, that prophecy, because of what it says in the United States and Britain in prophecy, because of what it says in your Bible, when the war against terrorism started 20 years ago, that's why the trumpet gave you the forecast that it did. And he was right. It says, on September 11, 2001, the U.S. experienced the deadliest attack on American soil since Pearl Harbor. Islamist terrorists killed nearly 3,000 people and plunged the U.S. into full-blown war. From the start, this war was doomed to fail. It was doomed to fail. It says, consider, to begin, the very definition America gave it. Entrapped in political correctness and thus uncomfortable with any unfavorable portrayals of Islam, America's leaders defined it as a war on terror. This is confusing. Terror is not an enemy, but a tactic. Failing to clearly identify Islamist extremism and its chief sponsor nations as the enemy is likening, or rather like defining World War II as a war on Blitzkrieg so as not to directly implicate Germany. And so from the start, Iran got a free pass. They got a free pass early on. 20 years. They've not taken one hit. Not even a flick of the finger. Nothing. We didn't go after the head of the snake. So as we said there, and he was right, we said it in the November issue, 2001, of The Trumpet. It was doomed to failure from the very beginning. And so now America's enemies celebrate, and rush to fill the power void. Listen to this report from Richard Engel earlier this week, clip two.
This is a profound moment, a profound moment of change for the entire, for all of Central Asia. There is a hole in the middle of Central Asia. It has been filled right now by the Taliban. But it is drawing in Iran, it is drawing in Pakistan, it is drawing in Central Asia. Iran is already moving in. They're trading oil with the Taliban already. They're spreading their influence already. China is trying to put more inroads into Afghanistan.
I mean, you're seeing more headlines and reports that like came out of the Trumpet magazine 15, 20 years ago. They're all over the place. Listen to this quote from Victor Davis Hanson. He says, watch Iran, the theocracy believes this is the most opportune time in 20 years to announce that it is or will soon be nuclear to unleash Hezbollah and to step up global terrorist operations on the assumption that Biden will bow his head and declare, we do not forgive, we do not forget, and then retire for an early nap. They know this is their time. They know this is their moment. There's Victor Davis Hanson writing a paragraph that comes almost straight from the Trumpet magazine. Watch Iran, Richard Engel. He's reporting much the same. What an opportunity. And he was right. We wrote, our immense wealth added to our broken will is a dangerous combination. As Mr. Armstrong wrote in the June 1954 Plain Truth, aggressor nations covet that wealth. Seeing our weakness and reluctance to use our power only intensifies the desire of these aggressor nations to take that wealth as soon as they are strong enough to do it. That will happen, and much sooner than you might think. That's what Herbert Armstrong foresaw. This is what he saw. The nations are not only coming after us because we're weak, they also covet. They covet our wealth. Here we gifted them with $80 to $90 billion of military hardware. We gave them a military force. And that was planned. That was not a mistake. This is not an example of gross negligence. This was all part of the handover. This was all part of the agreement. Look, we'll leave you all of the equipment, and how humiliating it is. How humiliating it must be for U.S. servicemen to now see images coming out of Afghanistan where these bloodthirsty terrorists who are going door to door carrying out revenge executions and wearing U.S. gear, wearing American gear, and a lot of it. This is also from Victor Davis Hanson's piece. Sorry, I had to hurry with my shuffling papers at the last minute. Estimates between 70 to 90 billion, he says. The stockpile likely includes 80,000 vehicles, 4,700 late model Humvees, 600,000 weapons of various sorts, 162,000 pieces of communications equipment. Well, he goes on and on. Listen to this. We can look at this disaster in a number of depressing ways. One would be to compare this giveaway to military aid given to Israel over the last 70 years, which more or less has amounted to about an aggregate of $100 billion. That's the military aid and assistance that we've given to Israel over the course of 70 years. Israel, longtime staunch ally of the United States, about $100 billion. Victor Davis Hanson says, in other words, in one fell swoop, the Pentagon deposited into Taliban hands about 80% of all the military aid that we've ever given to Israel since the founding of the Jewish state. That, my friends, is stunning. It is shocking. It is criminal. It is traitorous. This is more than ineptitude. This is more than incompetence, as we've been saying. This is an attack. This is a concerted effort to empower the enemies of America. Wait till you hear some of these other stories. Hopefully I have time to get to all of them. But here again, big picture, listen to what we've written in He Was Right in the Trumpet magazine, what Mr. Armstrong wrote in The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. This is my father from 2003. We've drawn attention to that November 2001 article or that Trumpet magazine right after 9/11. But listen to this one, Why We Cannot Win the War Against Terrorism. You see the cover headline right there. That's 2003. That's 18 years ago. And my father said, human logic should show America and Britain that they can't win the war against terrorism. This is not the Trumpet rooting for our nation's failure. This is the Trumpet lovingly sending out a warning message from God that, look, unless we turn to God in repentance, this is going to end miserably. And yesterday it certainly did. At least the effort in Afghanistan. It says here, Israel's losing its war with the terrorists, and so will the United States and Britain. We fear facing the origin of state-sponsored terrorism in the Middle East. We can never win the war against terrorism until we comprehend and deal with this reality. We can't negotiate a victory. Look, we've seen all these negotiations, even recently, with respect to Afghanistan. You've got the back and forth between General McKenzie and the Taliban representative. We think we can somehow negotiate a way to victory. And in fact, we're negotiating our way to a humiliating retreat, a defeat, as you heard in that montage. It says here, only superior power and the will to use it can win. That's my father in 2003. That's the Trumpet magazine 18 years ago. Only superior power and the will to use it. But see, we don't have the will anymore because we've lost the pride in our power. That's prophesied. Read Leviticus 26, 19 and 20. I've gone through it recently, but go through it again and see the prophecies of God just springing from the pages of your Bible. Bible prophecy has been fulfilled in Afghanistan. Here's what my father wrote in 2002. He said, most Americans don't truly understand how dangerous the war against terrorism really is. Nor do they comprehend the kind of leadership needed to conquer such a deadly enemy. It's a kind of war we have never fought before. He says, the big problem is America and Israel are fighting their terrorist wars in moderation. See, they won't use the power that they have at their disposal. And then, to make matters worse, we're giving so much of that power right over to our enemies. You know, the ones that are going door to door right now, executing those who supported America's effort. How long will it be before they get to the Americans' doors there in Kabul and across Afghanistan? How much longer before we see one of the first videos coming out of Afghanistan, an American hostage, an American prisoner, an American left behind? We'll get to that here in just a second. He wrote, our war on terrorism is a defensive war, and a simple defensive in war is ruin. It's ruin. That was the Trumpet forecast back in 2002, 2003. Here's what my father said in a Key of David program in 2010. This is clip 11.
Herbert W. Armstrong said in 1950, at the end of the Korean War, that America had won its last war unless it repented. Let me quote to you another quote here from this booklet. In February 1978, that's a long time ago, the days are over, Mr. Armstrong wrote, the days are over when the military might of the United States is used to accomplish what America perceives as correct and proper. America's influence and prestige is on the rapid decline. Rapid decline. The pride of our power has been broken. Now that was said in 1978, 32 years ago. And look at the trend. Look at how rapidly we have declined, as he said. Do we have a broken will? And we're actually creating a terrorist superpower as we're trying to stop that. Isn't that a terribly paradoxical? I should say it is, but it's a sign. It's a sign that the Messiah is coming and coming soon.
So there's some good news at the end of all of this carnage, and we can thank God for that. But the statement right before that, you'll notice he said, look, we're carrying out this mission to fight terror, to fight against terrorism, and we're actually creating a terrorist superstate. Is prophecy being fulfilled? You've got the terrorist, the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world, Iran, 20 years unscathed. And now they've got a neighbor in Afghanistan, a partner in terror, a partner to fight against the great Satan. And don't forget about the little Satan. And the prophesied clash between the King of the North, a European superpower, that finally sees this menace in the Middle East and says, you know what, we've got to do something. Obviously, America's not going to do it. You don't find America anywhere in that prophecy in Daniel 11:40. They've gone missing. They've evacuated. The entire military force is gone. And they left behind hundreds, probably more than what the State Department and others are saying. But supposing their estimate's right, even if it's 200 Americans now at the mercy of the Taliban. Listen to Joe Biden. This was, I think, less than 2 weeks ago. Clip 3.
And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out is out?
Yes, I think we'll get there.
So Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And?
And if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
We're going to stay till we get them all out? So he breaks his promise with the people of America, the people he represents or is supposed to. And he faithfully keeps his promise to the Taliban. We'll get out by August 31. Well, what if we stay a little bit longer? Taliban says, if you do, there's going to be repercussions. All right, then, we're out. We got out a day early. The Taliban, you see, that's what matters. That's whose opinion matters. Never mind the parents of those children that went to Afghanistan for the summer for some reason. But anyway, they're there. They are there. There are hundreds. And now the United States says to their own citizens, don't worry, don't worry. As I played for you yesterday, we've also got billions of dollars. That's not soft power. I mean, that's some significant power. If you do get into a hostage crisis, we can always pay the ransom. Here's an emotionless general, General McKenzie, as he's acknowledging yesterday, that there are people, American citizens, who've been left behind. Clip 5.
So the military phase of this operation has ended. The diplomatic sequel to that will now begin. And I believe our Department of State is going to work very hard to allow any American citizens that are left, and we think the citizens that were not brought out number in the low, very low hundreds.
The very low hundreds. Doesn't that make you feel better if you're an American? It's only, it's the low hundreds. That's what the, he's the head of the U.S. forces in the Middle East. Announcing yesterday, all the troops are gone, but not all the Americans. So much for, you know, never leaving an American behind. Here's the Secretary of State, Blinken, what he had to say on Who's Left, clip four.
We believe there are still a small number of Americans, under 200, and likely closer to 100, who remain in Afghanistan and want to leave. We're trying to determine exactly how many.
They don't even know how many. The estimates, remember just about 2 seconds ago, it was 15 to 16,000 that were there, Americans. And then we come to find out that most of the people leaving in those cargo planes are Afghans. And amid all of that evacuation process, there's just 5,500 Americans that have been evacuated. So now I guess, I don't know how the numbers went from 15 or 16 down to 5 or 6,000. But now they're saying, look, it's 200, but we think it might be closer to 100. And then the general, it's in the low hundreds. As if that's a good thing. 100 Americans in a terrorist super state? Heads would be, in another time, heads would be rolling. People would be fired. The top level military brass would be fired. As it is, who's been punished? In all the military of the United States, who's punished? Well, that lieutenant colonel that spoke out over the weekend and said, hey, where's the accountability here? He gets relieved of his command. But General McKenzie, I mean, I guess he's popping champagne bottles. We've evacuated over 100,000 people. What a success. The mission moves from the military phase now over to the diplomatic phase. And listen, we've got some real tools that we can use on the diplomatic level to make sure that those Americans are able to go home. Speaking of not leaving an American behind, listen to Barack Obama. This was, 7, 8 years ago? As he orchestrated the swap for an American traitor, Bo Bergdahl. Do you remember this? And listen to how Obama announced this news. This is clip 8.
Sergeant Bergdahl has missed birthdays and holidays and the simple moments with family and friends. But while Bo was gone, he was never forgotten. He wasn't forgotten by his community in Idaho or the military, which rallied to support the Bergdahls through thick and thin. And he wasn't forgotten by his country, because the United States of America does not ever leave our men and women in uniform behind.
No one's going to be left behind. Not even the traitor. Not even the one who deserted his troops and went and joined. He went and joined the Taliban or the enemy. I forget the exact group. But there's Obama. This is kind of ingrained into our thinking as Americans. We don't leave you behind. You see what's happening here? Do you see the attack coming now to this angle? Barack Obama swapped 5 Taliban generals, 5 Taliban chiefs from Gitmo in order to get Bergdahl released. No one left behind, right? So those generals then, those Taliban chiefs, they're sent over to Qatar. And he praised Qatar in that announcement there too. He said, I'd really like to thank our partners in Qatar. That we know that they're going to keep these Taliban chiefs in their nation and they're not going to return to the battlefield. This is what Paul Sperry wrote at the New York Post a few days ago. It says, when Barack Obama released 5 Taliban commanders from the Guantanamo Bay prison in exchange for an American deserter in 2014, he assured a wary public that the dangerous enemy combatants would be transferred to Qatar and kept from causing any trouble in Afghanistan. In fact, they were left free to engineer the sacking of Kabul. You know, the one that happened a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. They engineered it. So you see what's happening here? We trade Taliban commanders for a deserter and they orchestrate the takeover of Afghanistan and the humiliating defeat of the United States of America. This is Barack Obama from start to finish. This is the attack on America. America under attack. Talk about prophecy being fulfilled. Sperry says, soon after gaining their freedom, some of the notorious Taliban Five pledged to return to fight Americans in Afghanistan and made contacts with active Taliban militants there. But the Obama-Biden administration turned a blind eye to the disturbing intelligence reports, and it wasn't long before the freed detainees used Qatar as a base to form a regime in exile. Enemies of the United States, sworn enemies, wanting to come back to fight America. And now they're our partners. Now we're groveling at their feet. Please let our Americans go. We can't leave them behind. I know our military just left them behind, but please, please let them go free. When I come back, I'm going to take you through, again, a couple more stories. It's just shocking, really, to see, as you saw in that montage, to see these prophecies, dire prophecies for our own nations. They're just coming right to pass before our eyes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to send us some feedback, email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Yesterday, the Washington Post had an article, Surprise, Panic, and Fateful Choices, the Day America Lost Its Longest War. Here's another headline. The Day America Lost Its Longest War. That's in the Washington Post. And in this piece, it talks about the Taliban's rapid takeover of the country. It doesn't speak highly of the Afghani president who fled the country. It says that he got some bad intelligence or some bad information. But then, of course, the Afghan army collapsed after they were abandoned by the United States in the dark of night with respect to Bagram Airfield. But listen to this. It talks about the spur of the moment decision that the former Afghan president made. And then it says here, later, the United States had one last chance to challenge Taliban supremacy in Kabul, but opted to focus squarely on getting its people out from the airport. So they could have controlled the city. They could have controlled the entry points to the city. But they opted to just focus on the airport, which, as I've said previously, was just surrounded by all these hills and 4.5 million people. A real population center. It says here, the account of Kabul's fall, the climactic moment of America's longest war, is based on nearly two dozen interviews with U.S. and Afghan officials, a Taliban commander, and residents of the city. So some pretty thorough research to find out, well, what was going on in those last days? It all happened so quickly. And what this article is basically saying is that the United States, they didn't really care that the Taliban took over the city. You've heard all the previous statements. Well, no, we certainly didn't know it was going to happen in 11 days, said General Milley. You had the spokesman for the Pentagon himself saying everything's calm in Kabul on Saturday, and then the next day they're being airlifted out of the embassies. But this article exposes what the leaders were thinking with respect to not even just controlling the city, but just maintaining a secure perimeter for the sake of the evacuation operations that had to at least continue up through August 31, right? Listen to this. In a hastily arranged in-person meeting, senior U.S. military leaders in Doha, including McKenzie, the commander of U.S. Central Command, spoke with Abdul Ghani Berader, head of the Taliban's political wing. So they were negotiating for a victory, right? The head of the Taliban's political wing says here, "We have a problem," Berader said, according to the U.S. official. "We have two options to deal with it. You, the United States military, take responsibility for securing Kabul, or you have to allow us to do it." This is the Taliban, one of their chiefs, telling the supreme commander of the Middle East forces, the American forces, that, look, there's a problem developing, and you've either got to maintain control of the city or we do. It says, throughout the day, Biden had remained resolute in his decision to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan. The collapse of the Afghan government hadn't changed his mind. McKenzie, aware of those orders, told Berader that the U.S. mission was only to evacuate American citizens, Afghan allies, and others at risk. The United States, he told Berader, needed the airport to do that. On the spot, this is the Washington Post, on the spot, an understanding was reached, according to two other U.S. officials. The United States could have the airport until August 31st, but the Taliban would control the city. The Taliban. The United States just gave control of the city to the Taliban. Now, in light of events that happened not even a week ago, I know the fake president would say, now listen, George, that was so 4 or 5 days ago. 13 Marines blowing up at the Abbey Gate because the city was not secure. It wasn't even secure around the airport. And here comes a suicide bomber. Anybody get fired for this sequence of events? Anybody even getting up in front of a camera and saying, you know what, I think we got one or two things wrong. Nobody, like Tucker said in his monologue last night, not one person has even said they're sorry or apologized for making a mistake. In their minds, they've not made any mistakes. Everything's been perfect, right? Perfect. People are dead. People are dead because of this disastrous retreat. Doesn't matter that the Afghan government collapses. Biden, we're staying with the timetable. And then for General McKenzie, I mean, to deal with the Taliban like this, these are people that should be put in jail. These are traitorous actions. They're leaving Americans behind. They've left soldiers behind, drenched in blood, dismembered. Well, I suppose they bring them back for their burial. But those are deaths that could have been avoided if anyone, just had the courage to use a little bit of power. We're just talking about an evacuation that's safe. If someone just had the willingness to use power, think about how different it could be. You sympathize with these parents that say, even the burial, I couldn't believe it. You've got Joe Biden there looking at his watch. I wasn't even going to bring that up yesterday. I thought, well, looking at your watch one time, I mean, sometimes it can just be a nervous kind of reaction or what. But he said to look at it over and again while paying tribute to these fallen soldiers that blew up outside of an airport gate that wasn't secure. That's not even all of it. This is from Politico, also yesterday. Pentagon prepared for mass casualty attack at Kabul, the airport, hours before explosion. This is just from yesterday. Politico says just 24 hours before, a suicide bomber detonated an explosive outside Hamid Karzai International Airport. Senior military leaders gathered for the Pentagon's daily morning update on the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan. It says, speaking from a secure video conference on the conference room on the third floor of the Pentagon at 8 a.m., a lot of detail here because of a leak. We'll get to that in a second. It says, Wednesday, or 4:30 p.m. in Kabul, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin instructed more than a dozen of the department's top leaders around the world to make preparations for an imminent mass casualty event. As I was saying on the program last week, we all knew it was coming. The British authorities knew it was coming. Russia was giving us tips. Here's Lloyd Austin saying a mass casualty event is coming. Now keep in mind, they had just given the city of Kabul to the Taliban. They were trusting the Taliban to keep the airport perimeter secure. And here they know, they must know by this point, that was a massive fail to give them control of the city. But be that as it may, if an attack is coming, we're going to have to do something, extend the perimeter, shut the gates, at least keep our Marines inside. None of that happened. Says here, during the meeting, General Mark Milley, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, warned of significant intelligence, indicating that the Islamic State's Afghanistan affiliate was planning a complex attack. Commanders calling in from Kabul relayed that the Abbey Gate, that's where it happened, that's where the explosion happened, the Abbey Gate, where American citizens had been told to gather in order to gain entrance to the airport, was highest risk, and detailed their plans to protect the airport. It says here, I don't believe people get the incredible amount of risk on the ground, Austin said, according to notes from the meeting. It says here, on a separate call at 4 that afternoon, or 12:30 a.m. on Thursday in Kabul, the commanders detailed a plan to close Abbey Gate by Thursday afternoon Kabul time, but the Americans decided to keep the gate open longer than they wanted to in order to allow the British allies, who had accelerated their withdrawal timeline, to continue evacuating their personnel based at the nearby Baron Hotel. So they had to keep it open to keep the British citizens moving through to the airport. It was a chaotic scene. As it turns out, the Abbey Gate was left open, and the soldiers, U.S. soldiers, were out. They were outside the gate with crowd control duties. It says here, American troops were still processing entrance to the airport at Abbey Gate at roughly 6 p.m. in Kabul on Thursday when a suicide bomber detonated his explosive vest there, killing 200 people, including 13 U.S. service members. So they knew the attack was about to come, and they knew that the Abbey Gate was where it was probably going to happen, and they did nothing. Nothing. Crowd control? What about setting up a bigger perimeter? What about showing just a little bit of force? Hey, we know it's coming. To send your Marines out into the crowd, even when you know that there is a major attack coming, a mass casualty event. That's what Lloyd Austin said. General Milley, a significant, complex attack. Says American troops were still processing entrance. Well, I read that. In the week before the attack, President Joe Biden and top administration officials repeatedly spoke in public about the general threat ISIS posed. This account of the internal conversations among top Pentagon leaders in the hours leading up to Thursday's attack at the airport is based on classified notes from three separate calls provided to Politico and interviews with two defense officials with direct knowledge of the calls. So there's some leaking going on here, quite a lot of it, in fact. And the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, he didn't like that. They don't like it when the leaks don't hurt Donald Trump. But listen to this reporter who admits, he acknowledges at the start of his question that, you know, look, Mr. Kirby, I know this is difficult for me, but I got to ask it. This is clip six.
I have a question and it's difficult, but I hope you can entertain it. According to Politico, the U.S. knew where the attack would, or roughly where the attack would take place on Thursday and when it would attack, or when it would take place. Why were there U.S. troops at that gate at that time?
Jeff, what I can tell you is that we have been monitoring as close as we can intelligence that led us to believe that we were in a very dynamic and in some cases specific threat environment, number one. Number two, as General McKenzie said, we're gonna investigate. We're going to get to the bottom of what happened last Thursday. 13 precious lives were lost. We're going to take that seriously, and we're not going to investigate it in public.
So there's your hard-hitting response. Hey, we were in a dynamic situation, says Kirby, and we're not going to investigate this out in the public. There's nothing really for you to see here. We'll look at it internally. We'll do an internal investigation. But what about this Politico report? What about the fact that you knew this was coming and you knew the location? You even knew the timing. And they couldn't stop it. Now listen to this, this next mind-boggling statement that Kirby makes regarding the Politico story and the leakers that supplied the information for it. Clip seven.
Number three, I am absolutely not going to speak to a press story that was informed by the unlawful disclosure of classified information and sensitive deliberations here at the Pentagon. Just not going to do it.
13 Marines died. 13 Marines were murdered. And there's your Pentagon spokesman talking about the unlawful leaking. In his mind, I mean, that's an egregious sin. As to what happened, what we knew, why those Marines were out in the crowd, he's basically confirming that all of these discussions happened. What's the proper response? If you were totally blindsided, you didn't know it was coming, you weren't prepared for it, you say, look, we didn't know. Had we known this, we would have beefed up security. And there is no truth whatsoever to that Politico story. He just says, hey, I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm not even going to talk about it. Because there's an unlawful leak that happened here. What we say behind closed doors, it stays there, okay? Where's the uproar among the press corps or anywhere else for that matter? They gave up control of the city of Kabul. They knew a mass casualty attack was coming. And 13 Americans are now dead. And hundreds more have been left in a new terrorist superstate. And the only member of the military, the U.S. military, who's been punished amid all of this is the one who spoke out and said, hey, where's the accountability here? If an ordinary soldier makes a catastrophic mistake out on the battlefield, he's fired or set aside right away. But what about the leaders? What about our military chiefs? What about McKenzie? What about Lloyd Austin? What about Mark Milley? No one's held to account. They really and truly are celebrating, convinced that they did everything perfectly. And really, when you understand America under attack, they did. They did do everything perfectly. hand over this arsenal to the Taliban, one that rivals all of the aid and the support we've given to the little state of Israel militarily for 70 years. Just hand it over to them. And then as you're backtracking, as you're retreating, even as you realize, oh, well, we're going to have to send in a few more troops just so we can get all the Americans out. Even as you realize you need more troops for that, you say, no, Taliban, you can take the city. Take the city of Kabul. It was a city in chaos, leading all the way up to that attack that was so 4 or 5 days ago. People hanging on to airplanes. This is all in the last 2 weeks. Hanging on to the outside of airplanes as they take off, trying to escape from our new partners, trying to escape from the Taliban. Yesterday, one of our Black Hawk helicopters, it's carrying around an Afghani on a noose flying through the city. These are our new partners. Then the reports from Laura Logan and others, the Taliban going door to door last night. They didn't waste any time. Who needs to go to sleep if the U.S. forces are out by midnight? Let's carry out some executions here. And then 13 of our own. No wonder that mother, as she lays her boy to rest, I think today, is heading to the White House to call upon Joe Biden to resign. No wonder. He won't do it, I'm sure. Nobody's held to account here. But they're certainly being exposed, all of them, as the traitors that they are. This woman, by the way, venting on Facebook. And guess what happens to her? She's blotted out on Facebook. Oh, yes. You don't criticize Chairman Joe. Do you believe some of the things Mr. Armstrong also wrote, pointed out in this book? He was right about the communist infiltration. Do you believe America's under attack? Do you believe we're seeing the very last days of America's superpower and might? Do you believe Leviticus 26, 19 and 20? Do you believe that we've lost the pride in our power? Do you believe that all of our strength has been spent in vain? 20 years, $6 or $7 trillion, 20 years, 10,000 dead, 50,000 or so injured for life. And then what you saw yesterday, a humiliating defeat, a humiliating evacuation, an evacuation that was so bungled from the beginning. And again, how much of it, though, was planned? Go ahead and take the city. We don't want it. We'll just focus on the evacuation. And even after 13 Americans are murdered in a suicide bombing, still, you've got many of these leading figures congratulating themselves that we finally have gotten everyone out of Afghanistan. Well, not everyone. We still got those diplomatic tools that we can use to finish the job. There's plenty more to get to. That's all the time that I have for today's show. So we'll reserve some of this for tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to submit some feedback if you like, td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.